Warner Brothers Pictures.
You want to talk about the vanishing wilderness?
Louis, listen, why are you so anxious about this?
Because they're building a dam across the Cahuillawasi River. They're going to flood a whole valley, Bobby, that's why. Damn it, they're drowning the river. They're drowning the river, man.
All right.
Drowning.
All right.
Just about the last...
All right. Good talking to you.
All right. Just about the last wild, untamed, unpolluted, unfucked up river in the South. Don't you understand what I'm saying?
We understand what you're saying.
Stop the river up. There ain't gonna be no more river.
All right.
It's just gonna be a big,
watch
dead
progress.
Lake.
Clean way. Progress. That's shit.
Very clean way of making electric power. And those lakes up there provide a lot of people with recreation.
I don't give a shit.
My father-in-law has a houseboat over on Lake Bowie.
Oh, that's a nice place to
You just push a little more power. You push a little more power into Atlanta, a little more air conditioners for your smug little suburb, and you know what's going to happen? We're going to rape this whole goddamn landscape. We're going to rape it.
Oh, Louis, my...
That's an extreme point of view, Louis.
It is.
An extremist.
Deliverance. An explosion sends clouds of dust and rock into the air on the sheer face of a quarry. The cloud settles across the ground like a breaking wave. A John Borman film. The blast echoes through an overcast wooded wilderness. John Voight, Burt Reynolds. With Ned Beatty and Ronnie Cox.
Leave Friday from Atlanta. I'm going to have you back in your little suburban house in time to see the football game on Sunday afternoon. I know you'll be back in time to see the pom-pom girls at halftime, because I know that's all you care about.
A 4x4 and a saloon car on a forest road.
Are there any hillbillies up here? Any more, Lewis?
Yeah, there's some people up there that ain't never seen a town before. No bigger than Aintree, anyway. Those woods are real deep. The river's inaccessible, except for a couple of points.
How are we going to get there, Lewis?
Wait,
I'm going to take
it.
What the hell do you know about?
I know enough about the new one. This is the last chance we got to see this river. You just wait till you feel that white water under you, Bobby.
I don't know.
Produced and directed by John Borman. They pull up by a weather-beaten shack with fuel pumps outside.
Lewis, if we're lost, I don't want to hear about it.
I've never been lost in my life. I'll have you in the water in another hour.
Price, Drew. Drew, look at the junk. Look here.
Kicking a discarded rusty can.
I think this is where everything finishes up. We just may be at the end of the line.
Hey, not so loud, Bobby. Let's not upset these people.
People? What people?
This area may be evacuated already.
Bobby, a chubby man, notices an old rust bucket abandoned to the elements.
That's my $51. No, that's my car. That's my car. All my youth and passion spent in that backseat.
It's all gone, you see. All gone. Rust and dust.
A figure appears from behind the shack.
Lewis? Got a live one here.
The dark-haired Lewis strolls over.
Howdy. Howdy. Let me ask you something.
Are you from the power company?
Power company? What power company?
About a dam.
No. Look, come here a minute. See that car there? See that car down there? We want somebody driving down to Aintree for us.
Hell, you crazy.
No shit. Hey. Fill that one up with gas, huh? Okay?
Hell.
As the hunched old-timer wanders off, Lewis, Ed, and Drew smile amongst themselves. Bobby chats to the old-timer.
Say, mister, I love the way you wear that hat.
The man eyes Bobby from under the hat's wilting rim and then removes the faded brown garment from his head and studies it before casually flicking it back on again.
You don't know nothing.
Bobby turns and goes, his smaller flat-topped hat perched on his head. Drew's tuning a guitar he brought. A young lad with unusual, almost lidless eyes mirrors his playing on a banjo from a nearby porch. Ed puffs on a pipe and looks on with interest. Smiling, the lad takes a seat. Nearby, Bobby's recounting his encounter to Lewis. Lewis to the old timer.
I don't think you understood me. I want to get some drivers to drive this car and that car down to Aintree. Drivers, you understand?
You might get a driver, brother.
Who?
A driver, brother.
Where do they live?
They live back over that way.
The lad's haunting dark eyes remain fixed on Drew.
$4.99.
Bobby strolls over to Ed.
Talk about genetic deficiencies. Isn't that pitiful? Who's picking the banjo here?
The rough-faced, boss-eyed local takes in Ed and Bobby's bemused expressions before moving past them. At the musical interlude. The wrinkly old-timer starts to perform an impromptu jig. Bobby draws Ed's attention to the man's nimble footwork. Four visitors and locals alike seem to be enjoying themselves, including an old lady watching from a window in the shack.
Too. I believe you could.
That's good.
It's very good.
Very God good. Damn, you play a mean banjo.
Drew holds out his hand, but the lad looks away.
Hey, you want to play another one?
Give him a couple of bucks.
Can that chubby boy handle himself?
Who, Bobby?
Ed to Lewis.
He's rather well thought of in his field, Lewis.
Insurance?
Lewis is driving the 4x4 along a dirt track. Both vehicles have a kayak strapped to their roof. The 4x4 pulls up at another shack with a sign hanging from it reading Griner Brothers Garage.
I've never been insured in my life. I don't believe in insurance.
Lewis gets out, then smiles back at Ed.
There's no risk.
They head towards a wood cabin perched on the side of a gentle slope.
I have some.
Having no luck at the glass-paned front door, the well-toned Lewis heads round the side of the building. Ed peers in and notices a grey-haired, craggy-faced woman sitting in an armchair, while a disabled girl sits motionless opposite, her limbs twisted by palsy.
Ed! Over here!
Lewis has wandered over to a work hut that has hubcaps hanging on the wall outside it. He opens the door. A scruffy-looking local barges out past Lewis, clutching his hand, and kicks a nearby banger.
Anything we can do for you, is there?
No. It ain't as bad as I thought.
Your name, Griner?
What do you want to know for?
Can you and your brother drive two cars down to Aintree for us?
Drive them down there for what?
Me and my buddy here, we're going to take a canoe trip down to Cahulawasi. We'd like to have them cars in Aintree when we get there. Be there by Sunday noon.
Canoe trip?
That's right, a canoe trip.
What the hell you want to go fuck around that river for?
Lewis turns away.
Because it's there.
The local warns Ed.
It's there, all right. You get in there and can't get out. You're going to wish it wouldn't.
Listen, Lewis, let's go back to town and play golf.
Lewis checks Ed's worried look with a wink.
I'll give you $30 to take those cars down to Aintree.
I'll take 50.
50 my ass.
Lewis, don't play games with these people.
What'd you say? I said 50 my ass, Lewis.
The local gives the sky a cursory glance.
I'll do it for 40.
Mm-hmm. You good for 10?
Sure.
You got it.
Lewis hands Griner some cash. A concerned Drew.
Brando!
Hey, Lewis, you guys all right?
It's all set.
Randall, come on down.
We heard all this hollering and shouting.
I said it's all set, Drew.
This river cruise gonna happen or not?
He's getting your car, huh?
Drew shrugs at Bobby and they return to their vehicle. Griner and Brando hop into a rusty old pickup truck and lead the visitors away. A third man gets in armed with a shotgun. Lewis takes a small diversion across some grass to cut in front of the pickup, which has to brake. Ed looks back at the pickup from his passenger seat.
You don't think we better let them show us where the river is?
If I thought that, I would have let them go first, Ed. You know about where it is.
While Lewis navigates the uneven terrain, Ed looks at a map.
Here we go.
He takes a sharp right, only to find the way ahead blocked by refuse.
Well, we fucked up.
He slips the vehicle into reverse.
You better let them show us.
You're missing the whole point, Ed.
Lewis backs onto the main track, where Briner's grinning from his pickup.
Where are you going, city boy?
We'll find it.
It ain't nothing but the biggest fucking river in the state.
We'll find it.
Lewis leaves in a trail of dust. The pickup and saloon follow on behind once again.
Lewis! You son of a bitch, why do we have to go so damn fast?
You're gonna like it, Ed. You see the river, you're gonna like it.
The 4x4 hurtles along the bumpy potted track in dappled sunlight.
Jesus Christ!
Ed hunches up as they're bounced around in their seats.
All right! Ed!
Lewis! You're gonna kill us both, you son of a bitch, before we ever see you in the water!
Slow it down, Lewis, come on.
Here we go.
Come on, up for it.
The vehicle lurches dangerously to one side before Lewis brings it to a sudden halt. He grabs Ed's arm.
Listen, Ed. Listen.
He looks at Ed, a smile on his face. And then hurries out and scrambles up onto a small ridge of earth. Ed watches from his passenger seat before getting out himself. Glancing about with uncertainty, he sticks his pipe into his shirt pocket and studies his friend, who's glistening with sweat and breathing excitedly.
Sometimes you have to lose yourself before you can find anything.
Any snakes around here?
But Lewis is off over the ridge. Ed joins him in front of some dense foliage.
This is the one. There she is.
Lewis pulls a branch aside to reveal a shallow stretch of river shimmering in the sunlight.
Looks good. Looks good.
A couple more months, she'll all be gone.
Even up as far as here?
From Main Tree on up.
Lewis!
One big, dead lake.
Up here!
Hey, couldn't we have found a harder place to get in?
Oh, this is steep here now.
All right.
Watch yourself.
I'm watching.
Lewis to Ed.
You're losing glass on your boat.
Woo, it's freezing.
Hell, it'll hold.
Mm-hmm.
What in the hell are we gonna do? If we come off this river and our cars are not damaged,
what's his name?
They'll be there.
Well, they're pretty rough-looking boys, them hillbillies.
Can't judge people by the way they look, Chubby. You can trust them.
Drew has his guitar in a bag.
I'm going with you, Ed, and not with Mr. Lewis Medlock. Because I done seen how dry these country roads you don't know nothing about.
I guess you're going to be with me, Chubby. Get them supplies up there.
All right.
Come on.
Oh, it's cold.
Put this out.
Mama's car seat or something. I'm coming.
Here you go,
Bruce. Thank
you.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
I'm coming.
You can't go nowhere without your paddle, boy.
Yeah, just let me take it.
Like to went up the river without my oar, didn't
I? Bobby stumbles.
Shit.
We hit any strong water.
Come on, come on.
Set a barrel ass and through it.
I'm ready.
Come on.
I'm coming on.
I got myself a hook.
All right. Here.
I think we can save ourselves considerable hardship if we just backwater. Talk it out before we make our move. You got that, boy?
Right.
All right, put on your life jacket.
Right. Which way are we going? This way or that?
I think downstream would be a good idea, don't you?
All right.
So, you and Bobby see some rocks, you yell out now, right?
Right.
Which one's called a rock? Lewis, is this where you get your rocks off?
Uh-huh. Let's go.
Let's go.
Keep your eyes open,
Drew.
I'll rest you,
Drew. Keep your eyes open,
come
Robert.
Come on.
Atta boy.
Atta boy. Get with it.
Here we go.
Every move you make, call it out now, Drew. I'm behind you, dear.
Right, here we go.
See how fast we can shoot this little bush down here.
What is this? Is this some fast water we're coming up to?
All right, Drew, just get in behind Lewis there.
Look at this.
Get up to speed here, Hoss.
All right, let's go.
Just a little. There you have it.
Griner, Brando, and the other man were watching them set off. Now the explorers navigate some faster-flowing waters. Ed and Lewis are at the rear of each kayak, occasionally using their oars as rudders. Ed and Drew glide over a short drop-off behind Lewis and Bobby. Now at a wider stretch of river, the four men paddle harder to keep pace. Overhanging trees present patches of shade on the brown, murky water. Up ahead, the banjo-playing lad is watching them from a narrow, rickety bridge. Drew points at him.
Look, Ed.
Drew smiles and mimes playing a banjo on his oar, but the curious lad just gazes down, idly swinging his instrument. He watches them pass underneath him, his mouth agape, but his face expressionless. Ed can't help but look back at the lad's unnerving stare, but is forced to avert his gaze in order to steer around a fallen tree. The river stretches on towards distant hills, flanked by thick foliage. Later, the kayaks are approaching some rapids. Drew spots them.
Well, for the Lord's sake, can you look at that? What do we do now?
Drew snatches off his glasses. In the other kayak, Lewis stands up and smiles.
This is going to be fun! Just follow us!
Hey, what happens if we flip this thing over?
Now that you caught that up, hang on to your paddle. And if you hit any rocks, don't hit them with your head.
Watch Lewis. Maybe we can learn something. Backwater now.
Lewis and Bobby make the first drop.
Oh, yeah. All right. Now look up ahead where you're going.
All right, I'm looking.
Don't quit. Come on, paddle.
Okay.
The guys navigate the meandering rapids, collecting an occasional knock.
We made it.
Woo!
You gonna call a man now?
All right. Now left.
Drew yells. They approach a fallen log.
Keep it straight.
Yeah, that tree.
There.
Watch your head.
You ain't gonna make it.
Woo!
Damn it!
The kayak spins, so they're facing upstream, but they quickly rectify it.
Hey, this doesn't seem right.
Just a little unorthodox.
Go left, dummy. Come on, go left.
Straighten it out. All right, I got a spring. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah.
Turn it around.
Thank you, Lord.
Turn it around.
All right, hold it a minute. Slow it down.
All right, go. Go.
Good. Get your right hand. Good.
Now, here's a big one.
We're going to make it. Keep it straight.
Woo! I'm ready.
Drew's gripped by the ride and paddles hard. In the other kayak, Lewis's face is etched with concentration.
All right, we're all right now. Right.
Keep it right.
Both boats traverse a tricky drop, but there are more to come. Ed's teamwork steers them around a hazardous rock, and they take the lead.
All right now, Jelly, don't fall apart.
Entering calmer waters, the kayaks clatter together.
What the hell, I tell you? He's something else, ain't he?
Oh,
yeah. Hold on. I tell you, Lewis, that's the second best sensation I ever felt.
You did good, Chubby. You did good.
Damn, I thought we bought the farm there for a while.
Hey, you know that one place there?
You know what I was just thinking?
That one spot where...
First explorer saw this country. Saw it just like us. In a canoe.
I can imagine how they felt.
Yeah. We beat it, didn't we? Did we beat that?
You don't beat it. You don't beat this river.
Lewis puffs on his cigar and sets the kayak on down the river. Behind him, Ed glances about the lush scenery with a fresh appreciation. A fish glides through some clear shallows in a flat, quiet stretch of river. Lewis is standing in his kayak, about to take aim with a bow. He tracks the fish as it breaks the surface momentarily and then hovers against the current. He starts to reel in the arrow on the cord it was attached to. Ed's lounging at the back of the boat.
Machines are going to fail. And the system's going to fail. And then?
And then what?
Then survival. Who has the ability to survive? That's the game. Survive.
And you can't wait for it to happen, can you? You can't wait for it. Well, the system's done all right by me.
Oh, yeah. You got a nice job. Got a nice house. Nice wife. Nice kid.
You make that sound rather shitty, Lewis.
Why do you go on these trips with me, Ed?
I like my life, Lewis.
Lewis looks at Ed and then takes aim again.
Yeah, but why do you go on these trips with me?
You know, sometimes I wonder about that.
Smiling, Lewis targets another fish. He skewered it. Ed raises his can.
Here's to you, Lewis.
God damn, he got one. Terrific, Lewis.
I hate him.
The moon's obscured by a drifting cloud. The four men have set up camp at the water's edge. Drew's idly strumming a tune by the fire, in the glowing embers of which, fish bones are slowly blackening. Bobby pours his colleagues a measure of liquor from a bottle.
Well, it's red meat when I'm hungry, moonshine when I'm dry. Greenbacks when I'm hard up, religion when I die. The world's just a bottle and life's but a drag. I'm glad we came here. And a
bottle. Lewis?
Lewis does not drink.
Lewis smiles as he finishes off his piece of fish. Bobby sits down, bottle in hand. Drew strums the chords thoughtfully.
There's something in the woods and the water that we have lost in the city. We didn't lose it. We sold it. Well, I'll say one thing for the system. The system did produce the air mattress, or as it's better known among me camping types, the instant broad. And if you fellas will excuse me, I'm going to go be mean to my air mattress. I do baptize thee now in the name of modern technology. How sweet, oh yeah.
While Bobby sprays repellent over himself, something outside the camp has attracted Lewis's attention, and he silences the others, then heads off.
Lewis?
Does he think he is Tarzan or what?
A drunken Ed stumbles after Bobby down to the water's edge.
He knows the woods, though. He really does.
Not really. You learn him, he doesn't feel him. That's Lewis's problem. He wants to be one with nature, and he can't hack it.
This is a hell of a time to be telling us that.
Drew silences them, and they follow back up the slope, gazing into the darkness beyond. Lewis appears behind them with a troubled frown.
Jesus! Lewis, you scared the shit out of me.
Oh, what was it, Lewis?
He stares into the night and his eyes narrow.
I don't know. I thought I heard something. Something or someone? I don't know.
Lewis notices Ed swaying slightly. Then sets his bow down by his crude shelter, a blanket stretched over four corner supports.
Good night, Drew.
Bobby sighs.
I'm going to sleep.
Ed stumbles over towards his tent.
Night has fallen, and there's nothing we can do about it.
I had my first wet dream in a sleeping bag.
How was it?
Great. There's no repeating it.
Never mind.
Lewis watches Drew and Bobby enter their tent, then meets Ed's bloodshot gaze.
No matter what disasters may occur in other parts of the world, or what petty little problems arise in Atlanta, no one can find us up here.
Pausing in thought, Ed pops his pipe into his mouth.
Good night, Lewis.
Lewis shifts his gaze from Ed out into the night, and he sighs heavily. The next morning, Ed's the first to emerge from his tent. He's wearing long johns and a long-sleeved top, and takes in the picturesque misty forest scene. The campsite's a mess of life jackets and clothing. He takes some bowman's gloves and his pipe from his overalls that's been hung on branches to dry, and crouches by Lewis, who's fast asleep. Opting not to disturb his blissful sleep, Ed decides to take his friend's bow along with him anyway. He uses a nearby log to bend the powerful bow into its primed position. And then sets off into a wooded area near the water's edge. Alive to every sound echoing through the trees, he picks his way silently through the undergrowth, pausing every now and again to scan the scenery. He brushes aside a branch and presses further into the forest. Making his way up a slight incline, his eyes widen eagerly. Something spurs him to look round, and in so doing, he discovers a lone deer grazing peacefully a few feet away. He slowly raises the bow and unclips a metal-tipped arrow from its housing. With his eyes locked on the deer, he slowly positions the arrow in the bow and draws it back while taking aim. As the moment draws on, Ed's string-pulling hand begins to shake under the sustained tension. His frown of concentration falters. The arrow whistles past the doe, startling it into the foliage beyond. With a sorrowful look, Ed locates the arrow and yanks it from a tree. His frustration gets the better of him, and he stumbles down a slope.
God damn it!
Hey, Bobby. Look, I came out of the forest.
Uh-huh.
Get a shot in? Hell, sometimes a man can hunt for 3 years. Never get a shot, isn't that right, Lewis?
Right.
I don't understand how anyone could shoot an animal.
Some people never can, Drew. Hell, I've known tournament archers damn good shots.
Lewis?
Never out of the five ring. They draw down on a live animal and they get buck egger.
The hell's that? Loss of control. Psychological.
Who gives a shit?
You take that chubby boy with you today, okay?
Ed goes to say something but hesitates, and Lewis throws a tent pole down with some other belongings nearby. Later on, Bobby to Ed.
Hope to God we can get off this river today.
I don't get too far ahead now.
No, we'd be taking it slow.
Bobby paddles off.
Easy, easy, my man.
I got eaten alive last night.
My bites have got bites.
Robert?
I'm a salesman, Ed.
Robert? Good morning.
I'm not mad at you, Ed. Just do me a favor. Don't holler at me. I'm not used to being hollered at. Damn friend of yours screamed at me all day long yesterday.
Hell, you son of a bitch.
As they paddle on, Ed removes his life jacket under the heat of the sun. The river meanders on through breathtaking scenery. At one point, Ed and Bobby are forced to carry their kayak over a rocky ridge that's too shallow to boat over. Now they're once again gliding over smooth waters. Ed swigs from a can. A waterfall tributary is glimpsed through some trees. Later, Bobby spots something darting across the river in front of them.
Look!
It's a snake. Later, while Ed's pulling the boat onto a bank...
What in the hell are Lewis and Drew doing up there anyway?
Probably they're doing the same thing we are.
Ed trudges up a side stream and splashes his face with water. Then, he suddenly notices a figure crossing further up, and another person further ahead, picking through the woods, carrying a shotgun.
Bobby
turns from the river and follows Ed's gaze up to the men as they make their way over. As Bobby goes up to meet the strangers, one of them stops a short way off. He's a burly character with a cap and braces holding up his trousers.
How goes it?
The other stranger's brandishing the shotgun and stands between two trees.
What the hell you think you're doing?
Bobby turns away.
Heading down river. Little canoe trip. Heading for Aintree.
Aintree?
Sure. This river only runs one way, Captain. Haven't you heard?
You ain't never gonna get down to Aintree.
Well,
why not?
Cause this river don't go to Aintree. You done taken a wrong turn. The Sherry River don't go nowhere near Aintree.
The two strangers share a look.
Where does it go then?
Bobby's unnerved when they both turn to him. The burly man walks around him, sizing him up.
Boy, you are lost, ain't you?
Well, hell, I guess this river comes out somewhere, don't it? That's where we're going. Somewhere. Look, we don't want any trouble here.
If you gentlemen have a still near here, hell, that's fine with us.
Well, sure. We never tell anybody where it is. You know something? You're right. We're lost. We don't know where in hell we are.
A hill?
Right, yeah. You making some whiskey up here. Well, buy some from me. We could use it, couldn't we?
Well, you know what you're talking about?
Oh, we don't know what you're talking about.
No,
honestly,
no, no.
We don't.
You said something about making whiskey, right? Ain't that what you said?
We don't know what you're doing, and we don't care. That's none of our business.
That's right. It's none of your goddamn business. Right.
We've got quite a long journey ahead of us, gentlemen. Well...
Oh, Rick,
you ain't Jesus. Going no damn world.
This is ridiculous. Excuse me.
Howard, I blow your guts out all over these woods.
The burly man shoves Bobby towards Ed.
Well, gentlemen, we can talk this thing over. What is it you require of us?
Well, we require that you get your goddamn ass up in them woods.
All right, now, look. Down.
You get right down,
Taylor. Okay, all right.
Get up there.
All right.
Faster, boy. Move that ass.
Take it easy with that weapon you got in your hand.
You too. Shut up. Come on.
Okay.
Right on.
It's all in trouble here.
Oh, you're in trouble.
Just don't argue with him, Ed. Don't.
Come on. See that sapling over there?
You got him here.
I want you back up against that.
Is this a matter of money, you gentlemen?
We want money. We'll take the money back up against the tree.
Yeah.
Put your back.
Pretty far back against it.
All right, stay just there. Now be still. Be real still.
If he tries that again, shoot that in there.
I'll blow his bad blame balls off.
Hey,
boy. You ain't hear me, then, you big boy.
Be still now.
The burly man unbuckles Ed's belt and yanks it off. He secures Ed to a tree with it wrapped around his neck, then unsheathes a knife and turns to Bobby.
Now let's you just drop them pants.
Drop?
Just take them right off.
I mean, what's this all about?
Don't say anything, just do it.
Just drop them, boy.
Unzipping Ed's overalls.
You ever had your balls cut off, you fucking ape?
Lord.
Then studying Ed's knife.
Look there. That's sharp, a bit of shave of hair.
Why don't you try it and see?
Lord. Deliver us from all.
The burly man's stubbly colleague.
With all that little old bitty shirt there, too.
The burly man runs the blade over Ed's chest.
Did he bleed?
He bled.
Bobby's almost undressed.
Them panties. Take them off.
The burly man holds the blade up and then hurls it into a tree before chasing Bobby, who's trying to flee. Ed can only watch as Bobby struggles pathetically up a leafy slope, the burly man slapping his behind playfully.
No.
He shoves Bobby back down the slope.
No, don't.
Hey, boy.
No.
You look just like a hog.
No, don't.
You look just like a hog.
Don't.
Come here, Figgy.
No.
Come here, Figgy, Figgy. Come on. Go, Figgy. Give me a ride. Hey, boy, get up and give me a ride.
All right.
Get up and give me a ride, boy.
All right.
Get up.
Get up.
Bobby collapses under the burly man's weight. The man grabs his pants.
No.
Ed looks on, disgusted but helpless.
Look like we got us a sow here instead of a boy.
The burly man gets up. The man grips Bobby's ears and forces him over a log.
Get down there, boy. Hey, your bridge is down. It's there. You better that, boy. You better that. Come on, squeal. Squeal.
Much to his friend's amusement, the burly man squeals and forces himself into Bobby. Ed nearly chokes, trying to struggle free. The stubbly stranger turns his beady gaze on Ed, who's writhing frantically. He gives Ed a disturbing grin, revealing a gap where his front teeth should be, and Ed falls still with grim resignation. Then something catches his eye down by the river. It's Lewis and Drew in the other kayak. Ed glances at Bobby's face pressed into the dirt. The belt's gripping Ed's throat tightly, and his head lolls. Having finished his business, the burly man stands up and pulls his braces back on. He then makes his way over to his friend, who fixes Ed with an eager, toothless grin. The smile changes to a piercing, blue-eyed leer. The strangers walk over to Ed, and the burly man, now glistening with sweat, goes to release the belt around his neck. Ed pops his pipe into his mouth to free his hands, but the burly man snatches it out and hurls it aside. Ed sinks to his knees. The burly man lifts his chin up so Ed's facing the other stranger. The leering man holds the shotgun to his throat.
What you want to do with it?
He got a little pretty mouth, ain't he?
That's the truth.
Ed locks eyes with Lewis. He's poised behind the strangers with his bow raised.
You're going to do some praying for me, boy. And you better pray good.
Ed's eyes widen in anticipation. As the burly man takes the gun, an arrow pierces his chest from behind. His colleague then wrestles with Ed for the gun, but Ed comes off with it, and the man flees into the woods, chased by Drew brandishing an oar.
You better run, you son of a bitch!
Drew then checks on Bobby, who's still bent over the log in shock. Ed and Lewis watch the other dying stranger as he keels over on his knees. With a morbid fascination, they stare down at him as he rises unsteadily back onto his feet, his mouth hanging open and the head of the arrow stained with blood. In contrast, its bright orange flight is still clean and protrudes from his back. His head is tilted back in a silent, painful cry, and he staggers a little before bringing his right arm round to point at something. Ed's eyes widen, and he shuffles back slightly. Lewis looks on with a loathsome expression as the stranger eventually slumps against a tree. His hands twitch, and blood drips steadily off the arrowhead. Drew comes over.
Can't we do anything for him?
Hit a shot.
I thought they'd surely kill us.
They would have. They would have, for sure.
Lewis clicks an arrow back into its housing.
What are we going to do with it?
There's not one thing to do. Take the body down the entry. Turn over the highway patrol. Tell him what happened.
Bobby staggers over.
Tell him what? Exactly.
It's just what happened. I mean, this is a justifiable homicide, if anything is. They were sexually assaulting two members of our party at gunpoint. Like you said, there was nothing else we could do. Is he alive?
Lewis rests his hand on the flight of the impaled arrow.
And now?
Bobby edges towards the body.
Well, let's get our heads together. Come on, Al, let's not do anything foolish.
Ed leads him away.
Anybody know anything about the law?
Ed's helping the bewildered Bobby put his clothes back on. Drew gathers his thoughts and puts on his glasses.
Look, I was on jury duty once.
Then snatches them off and tries to regain his composure.
It wasn't a murder trial.
A murder trial? Well, I don't know the technical word for it, Drew. But I know this. You take this man down out of the mountains and turn him over to the sheriff, there's going to be a trial, all right. A trial by jury.
So what?
We killed a man, Drew. Shot him in the back. A mountain man. A cracker. That gives us something to consider.
All right. Consider it. We'll listen.
Shit, all these people are related. Be goddamned if I want to come back up here and stand trial with this man's aunt and his uncle. Maybe his mama and his daddy sitting in the jury box. What do you think, Bobby?
Now clothed, Bobby lunges for the body again. Ed and Drew have to restrain him. Lewis looks at them all.
How about you, Ed?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Now you listen, Lewis. I don't know what you've got in mind. But if you try to conceal this body, you're setting yourself up for a murder charge. Now that much law I do know. This ain't one of your fucking games! You killed somebody! There he is!
I see him, Drew. That's right, I killed somebody. But you're wrong if you don't see this as a game.
Lewis!
Are you listening, Ed? Damn it, we can get out of this thing without any questions asked. We get connected up with that body and the law, this thing's gonna be hanging over us the rest of our lives. We gotta get rid of that guy.
Just how are you gonna do that, Lewis? Where?
Anywhere.
A thought occurs to Lewis, and he gets a wild look.
Everywhere.
He looks around the forest and holds up his hands.
Nowhere.
How do you know that other guy hasn't already gone for the police?
Well, what in the hell is he going to tell them, Drew? What he did to Bobby?
Drew looks away, racked with guilt and anguish.
Well, now, why couldn't he go get some other mountain men? Now, why isn't he going to do that? You look around you, Lewis. He could be out there anywhere, watching us right now. We ain't gonna be so goddamn hard to follow dragging a corpse.
You let me worry about that, Drew. You let me take care of that. You know what's gonna be here? Right here? A lake. As far as you can see. Hundreds of feet deep. Hundreds of feet deep. Did you ever look out over a lake? Think about something buried underneath it? Buried underneath it. Man, that's about as buried as you can get.
Well, I'm telling you, Lewis, I don't want any part of it.
Well, you are part of it.
It is a matter of the law.
The law? The law? What law? Where's the law, Drew? Huh? You believe in democracy, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, then we'll take a vote. And I'll stand by. And so will you.
Lewis steps up close to Drew and fixes him with a piercing stare.
What do you say, Bobby?
Let's bury him. I don't want this getting around. Okay?
Looking at Ed.
Okay?
It's up to you, Ed. It's all up to you, Ed.
Ed's expression betrays his dilemma. Drew pleads with him.
I just think what you're doing, Ed. For God's sake. You've got a wife. You've got a child. You're not involved in this. Think about your family, Ed. This may be the most important decision of your whole life, Ed. Yes. There's no way we can change this. There's no way we can change what happened to Bobby. We got to do the right thing, Ed. We're going to have to live with this for the rest of our lives.
Right!
I'm with Lewis.
All right. Let's get on with it then.
Lewis heaves the corpse over so that it's resting against the tree on its back. Drew turns away and staggers against a tree as Lewis grabs the shaft of the arrow and wrenches it out through the man's chest. Now all four men are shouldering the body down to the water. Lewis is holding his bow in his spare hand, and Bobby, the stranger's shotgun. They cross the stream leading down to the river, struggling to get over a fallen tree along the way. Bobby ducks underneath the trunk while the others support the corpse. He then helps take the weight while Drew steps over the log. The going is painfully slow, but eventually they dump the body on a leafy slope. There's bloodstains around its gaping mouth, and its eyes are open and fixed in a haunting upward position. Lewis, Ed and Bobby quickly set about clearing a burial site, but Drew pauses with a troubled expression. Under the weighty stares of Lewis and Ed, he reluctantly starts to dig, and it builds to a frenetic pace. Bobby pauses briefly as well, the brim of his hat hiding his eyes. Their hands grab and scratch at the loose soil in a primitive fashion, and a hole begins to form. The others notice Drew's frantic movements and become unsettled by them. Bobby glances over at the corpse, a few feet away. Lewis kicks a stubborn patch with his foot, while Ed jabs his knife into the soil to help loosen it. When it's barely a foot deep, they haul the body into the muddy, churned-up pit. Bobby almost reverentially passes the gun to Lewis, who lays it beside the corpse. Drew looks around, slightly dazed. Now, glistening with sweat, the men start to cover the body with earth. A pallid, lifeless hand is overlooked and sticks out of the earth, frozen in a gesture akin to pleading. They look at it momentarily before Ed quickly shoves it down and covers it up. Barely a few inches of loose soil covers the corpse when they are done, but then they lift a heavy fragment of bark from a large tree and rest it over the shallow grave to weigh it down. Lewis is the first to stand, eager to depart. The others sit back and share awkward looks. Drew says a silent prayer and crosses himself. It spurs Ed to do the same. He bows his head. They race down the stream until they reach the river. Ed stumbles and quickly starts to wash his hands. Lewis scrambles off up a ridge.
Lewis, let's go.
What's the plan, Lewis?
Lewis scans the woods.
Plan? Just paddle on down to Hay Creek, get the cars and go home.
Ed and Drew have already cast off away from the bank. Once Lewis is aboard, Bobby's eager to do the same.
Put the jacket on, Drew! Drew!
He ignores Ed and just keeps paddling.
Put your life jacket on!
Drew gives a heedless backward glance, then resumes paddling as they enter some rapids. The river has narrowed considerably. Lush greenery that lined the banks earlier has given way to jagged walls of rock. Drew pauses, looking exhausted. He reluctantly resumes. Steering the kayak behind, Lewis glances up at the valley walls. Thrown himself overboard. The kayak blocks a bottleneck and snaps when the other one plows into it, catapulting the rest of them into the raging torrent. Everyone but Lewis had their life jackets on, but they're still tossed about like rag dolls. Ed tries to grip onto an overhanging rock, but the current tears him away. flails about and manages to grab onto the bow, but is then sent tumbling down a steep, shelving rock face. Fragments of kayak tumble down the thundering waterfall around him as he's carried spinning and twisting from one plunging drop to the next. With barely enough time to breathe, he fights to stay afloat. The remaining metal kayak slides down the waterfall behind him. Limbs flail in the white water, and then a figure surfaces. The half-submerged kayak drifts aimlessly downriver, Ed surrounded by debris. Bumped and buffeted, Lewis comes sliding down the waterfall at a frightening pace. The other half of the kayak and some of their belongings are sent tumbling down behind him.
Where's Drew? Back, bro! Where's Drew? I think it's broken off!
Lewis!
Drew was shot! Something happened to him!
What?
Lewis hauls himself onto a rock. The thigh bone on his right leg is badly broken and poking through his trousers. Ed and Bobby drag themselves over to him.
Lewis!
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 Here! Hold him here!
I got him.
Hold on! Hold him!
Go!
Ed's cries echo around the narrow ravine. He dives into the water and ducks down briefly to search the murky depths. The remnants of Drew's guitar drift past. With grim resignation, Ed sets about recovering the kayak. Glances up towards the top of the cliff face towering over them, then contemplates their predicament.
He's gonna try and kill us too. If he killed Drew, he's gonna have to kill us.
Lewis winces in pain.
Lewis! Lewis! Tell you what. We'll wait until dark and we'll put you in the bottom of the canoe and
sneak out of here. Okay, Bobby, look at those rapids down there. Look at those rapids.
Christ.
Try
it. Move out of here in the dark. We're not going to move you, Lewis.
Lewis, we're trapped in this gorge. Dead.
Lewis.
Dead.
What are we going to do, Lewis? You're the guy with the answers. What the hell are we doing now?
Lewis grabs Ed by the scruff.
Now you get to play the game.
You're ruined! Lewis, you're ruined!
Ed rolls his head and looks around.
Ed, listen. He's hurt bad, isn't he? What are we going to do? Guy must know exactly where we are.
Well, if he knows where we are, then we sure as hell know where he's gonna be. Right up there.
On the top of a sheer, craggy cliff above them. Night has fallen in the thundering gorge. Ed's preparing to leave the rocky cover they have remained in. He has the bow over one shoulder. Lewis is lying in a crevice, shivering against the cold. He watches as Ed begins his ascent up the cliff face. Bobby chances standing on an exposed rock to monitor Ed's progress. A rock crumbles underfoot and Ed clings on for dear life. He climbs into the path of some runoff and lets the water hit his face. The rapids thunder relentlessly far below him. Lying on a tiny shelf, he nearly loses the bow. He tucks it between him and the cliff, and then chances a look down into the gorge.
Christ.
Racked with doubt, he fumbles in his torn overalls for his wallet. Upon flipping it open, he stares longingly at a photograph of his wife and son. It spurs him on, but then the wallet slips through his fingers.
God damn it! You'll never get out of this gorge alive! God damn it! Put yourself together.
Sometime later, he's nearing the top of the gorge. Clinging to the cliff edge, he struggles to secure the bow on his shoulder, then proceeds up over the lip onto the cliff top. Once up, he takes the bow in hand and wearily gets to his feet. As if remembering why he climbed the gorge, he suddenly crouches and holds the bow ready before scanning his surroundings. He then sets off into a wooded area encroaching on the cliff edge. He slides down a sloping rock and checks behind him. Satisfied there's no threat, he then shifts about, unsure of whether he should settle down for the night or arm the bow and stand guard. He blinks hard against his exhaustion then sets the bow down beside him in order to put his archery gloves on. His head lolls back against a rock and his eyes close, but he fights the sleep and opens them again. The roaring river far below lulls him with its distant echoing rumble. His head drops and he starts to drift off again. He checks his surroundings once again, but there's nothing there. And his head lilts once more. By morning, Ed's fast asleep. A figure with a shotgun appears on the cliff edge behind him and peers over the side. Ed snaps awake. Spotting the stubbly stranger from earlier, he presses himself back against the rock and quietly reaches for the bow at his side. He takes an arrow in one hand and sets about readying the bow. The stranger remains peering over the cliff edge several meters away. Ed must break cover to take aim. He draws the bowstring back, but his hand begins to shake once more. The stranger rolls the stiffness out of his shoulders. Ed's aim is becoming very erratic.
Release.
The stranger spots him and brings his shotgun to bear. The gunshot makes Ed fall back onto an arrow and it pierces his right side. He freezes upon seeing the stranger trudging over through the trees. Ed grips the arrow and yanks it cleanly through. Then, upon seeing the stranger appear over the brow of a rock, he quickly unsheathes his knife. The stranger unsteadily raises his weapon and cocks it to shoot. He lurches forward, having shot the ground. Then he keels over, revealing Ed's arrow actually pierced his chest. Still clutching the knife, Ed struggles to his feet and scrambles over the rocks to his fallen foe. The tension ebbs away when he discovers the man is dead, but then he notices something and he drops the knife.
No!
He clasps the man's head in his hands and studies his full set of crooked teeth with dismay. He presses the front two with his thumbs, and they come away on a dental plate. Ed sags against the corpse, and a sense of relief washes over him. The sun lights up the lining of a cloud passing overhead, far above a gently swaying branch. A while later, Ed has used his top to bandage his wound and is now setting about disposing the murder evidence. He pulls the arrow from the corpse and throws it into the gorge, then does the same with the stranger's shotgun. When it hits the water far below, Bobby breaks cover and looks up inquisitively. Ed then hurls his broken bow into the depths as well. Bobby sees it hit the water and looks back up the cliff with mounting concern. Ed then uses the rope he'd brought with him to lower the stranger's body over the cliff edge. The dead weight dangles limply as it's slowly lowered down. Ed feeds the rope through his bare hands with a great deal of effort. Inch by painful inch, Ed carefully lowers the body closer to the rocks at the bottom of the gorge. When he runs out of rope, he leaves the corpse hanging and then checks the knot with which he fastened the other end to a tree. He then sets about using the rope to climb back down into the gorge himself. He braves the sheer cliff face, trees and foliage rising out of the yawning depths around him. The corpse dangling below keeps the rope taut. At the lip of the cliff, the rope scuffs and rubs as Ed loses his footing. His bare back hits the hard rock face, and it takes him a moment to recover before he can set off again. As it rubs, the rope starts to fray. Ed tumbles down the cliff into the deep waters below. As he flails about, he becomes entangled, roped into a macabre underwater dance with the fallen corpse. Bobby's grabbed some of the rope and uses it to haul Ed and the body to safety. Ed listens to Lewis's chest while Bobby strains to hold the body against the current.
You did it, Ed. Good. You sure it's him? That's the guy with the gun, huh?
I think so.
If he wasn't some guy just up there hunting or something, was he?
You tell me!
Ed shoves the corpse's face at Bobby and looks away. Now, Ed's weighing the body down with a large rock and the rope. With a nauseous expression, he stands up and rolls the corpse into the water. Lewis has been moved into the kayak. His life jacket has been fixed around his broken leg. Bobby gets in the front as Ed approaches and climbs into the back. Then they paddle off down the river. It's not long before they enter another set of rapids. They follow the water's flow in somber silence. As they approach a cluster of rocks, Drew's mangled body becomes visible.
Ed!
They paddle into a narrow channel leading towards the driftwood Drew's been snagged in. Ed hops out of the boat and steadies the vessel. Drew's left arm is forced unnaturally around the back of his head. Ed wades over with a distraught expression. Grief-stricken, he touches the body and then studies it carefully while Bobby comes over to join him.
Was he shot?
Ed notices something on the top of his head.
What about here? What about right there?
Could have been a rock.
They stop searching the body, and Ed heaves it loose.
What are you going to do with Drew?
If a bullet made this, there are people who can tell.
Oh, God. There's no end to it.
Bobby lends a hand to free the legs, and they secure Drew's body to the side of the kayak. They wade across the river into waist-deep water, the kayak at their sides, and then pause. Bobby lifts a large rock that has rope attached to it out of the boat and drops it into the water, then watches Ed about to do the same. The rope's wrapped around the corpse of their friend. The pair stare at each other for a moment.
I didn't really know him.
He was a good husband to his wife, Linda. And you're a wonderful father to your boys, Drew. Jimmy and Billy Ray. And if we come through this, I promise to do all I can for them.
Barely conscious, Lewis shifts in the kayak. Bobby stares forlornly at Drew's body, and Ed looks up ashamedly.
He was the best of us.
Amen.
Ed lets the corpse slip below the murky waters, while Lewis stirs feebly. Ed and Bobby lift themselves back into the kayak and continue on down the river. It's not long before Ed's face is set with grim determination to navigate yet another set of rapids.
Christ, look at that! God help us!
They paddle frantically and slide over a rocky shelf. Lewis grits his teeth as he's buffeted around in the middle of the boat. They head towards another steep drop-off. And pass around an open section of exposed rocks, the kayak getting battered along the way. Lewis writhes in agony. Bobby's jaw drops at a waterfall up ahead. Race down, just managing to stay upright, but the relentless torrent carries them onward. Both men are paddling for their lives. They tear along the river, Lewis shrieking between them. Paddling desperately, they finally pass through the white water, after which the surface of the river calms. Bobby slumps forward, exhausted, and Ed guides the kayak towards the rusting hulks of two cars on the far bank.
Bobby! Bobby!
Bobby climbs out, relieved to see the remnants, at least, of civilization.
We made it! We made it, Ed! We made it!
We're back, Ed!
Lewis, we gotta get Lewis to the doctor.
Right, right.
You let Lewis to the doctor.
Right.
Bobby.
Lewis.
Bobby.
We're back. We made it.
Everything happened. Bobby, listen. Everything happened right here. Lewis. Lewis broke his leg in those rapids there. And Drew drowned here.
This
place here.
No, nothing happened here.
Bobby, listen to me. We got to stop them from looking up river. It's important that we get together on this thing. You understand?
I understand, Ed. I understand.
That's right. That's right, Lewis. It's our story.
Lewis, we're back.
Lewis falls back in agony.
It's all right.
Get Lewis to the doctor.
All right, Ed. All right.
We'll find a place to put it. We're not out of this yet.
They paddle on, Bobby silenced by Ed's harsh tone. Now they're paddling across a more expansive body of water. Partially submerged trees pop up through the surface at the edges. In the distance, beyond the stranded foliage, the quarry for the dam dominates the skyline. Some way up ahead, the dam's taking shape. Its wall of loose rubble looms out of the water, and on its brow, a truck dumps another load down its face. Bobby and Ed paddle around a corner towards a building near the shore. Ed's the first to climb out. The wooden paneled building has Church of Christ painted above its doors. It's been raised off its foundations in preparation for moving away from the rising waters. While Bobby drags the kayak with Lewis in up onto a road that disappears into the waters, Ed searches for signs of life, nursing his arrow wound. Ed's jogging along a road through a deserted landscape that's been partially cleared of the foliage that once shrouded it. He hobbles up the brow of a hill on the edge of the quarry and pauses briefly. To his surprise, the 4x4 and saloon car are parked neatly in front of a run-down garage.
They brought the car.
Ed runs his hand over the bonnet of the car. A blonde-haired boy steps towards him.
You come for the car, sir?
Yes. No, do you have a phone?
Phone?
Telephone?
Yes, sir.
Now, medics carry Lewis on a stretcher.
You're gonna be all right. What in the world happened to you guys?
Drew Ballinger. B-A-L-L-I-N-G-E-R.
Did you look for it?
A long time.
The medic smiles reassuringly at Ed, who's in the back of the emergency vehicle with Lewis. As it drives away, Ed watches police interviewing Bobby on the road by the church. a doctor to Ed.
How'd you mean to shoot yourself with your own arrow? Didn't think that could be done.
It's nice.
What's that?
Oh. Chromium, paper tissues. Hot water. It's nice.
You falling asleep?
Don't forget to phone your wife now. Let her know how you are.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
The medics dropped Ed off at a large building. He looks through the screen door and sees a group of people eating dinner around a table. Bobby's chatting amongst them.
You see?
Bereft of emotion, Ed shows himself inside. A woman spots him lingering by the door.
Seven now.
Oh, hello. Come on in.
That would be too much, you won't think.
We saved your seat.
Bobby stands and sits down sheepishly when he does.
Do you feel like eating something?
Please.
A grey-haired woman beside him.
Some corn.
The other woman pours him a glass of milk. Bobby, a plaster above his left eye, watches him. The diners continue to pass more food to him. Ed takes the offerings and serves some of each onto his plate, but then his emotions get the better of him. He's barely able to look anyone in the eye, and so Bobby diverts the attention away from him by eating another mouthful of food and saying,
"It's corn special, isn't it?
Ed meets Bobby's gaze with an appreciative smile and lets the ensuing conversation distract him. The next day, Ed's perched on a bed, unbuttoning a new shirt, and eavesdropping on a conversation outside. He goes out onto a first-floor balcony. There's a dressing on his arrow wound, and his torso is marked with cuts and scrapes. He rounds a corner to see a police officer walk off with Bobby, patting his back. Ed turns and suddenly notices the officer's car in the street below, with half of the wooden kayak strapped to the roof. As he heads back inside, he encounters Bobby coming to see him.
Ed? Ed, we're in trouble. They don't believe us.
What are you telling Bobby?
What we agreed on.
I heard you. I was in that room, Bobby. What'd you tell him? They found part of the green canoe, didn't they, Bobby? Upstream, and you got scared. Didn't you, Bobby? I know you. You told the truth, didn't you, Bobby? You told the truth.
I didn't do that!
Bobby tries to pin Ed, but gets pinned himself.
I told them, like we said. But I don't think they believe me. Ed, I think they found that other canoe. Upstream, above where we told them.
Men throwing a large net into the water by the rusty cars.
I never said that.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
I know damn well you did.
I know what I said.
Yeah, well, that's a goddamn lie. Sheriff, that ain't what he said this morning. You tell me how a canoe can drift up river.
The sheriff to Ed.
Now, what about this?
Look, Sheriff, we've been through quite a lot. I don't know what's wrong with your man there.
Mr. Queen's got a brother-in-law back up in there somewhere. He took off hunting a couple, 3 days ago, and nobody's heard from him since. And Mr. Queen thought maybe y'all might have happened up on him somewhere.
Well, we didn't.
Ed, don't let him go. These boys is lying.
We've got nothing to hold him for, Arthur. We don't have a thing.
Arthur stalks off, and the sheriff turns to gaze out across the water.
Let's just wait and see what comes out of the river.
Bobby glances round at Ed, and the pair share a pensive look. Meanwhile, the dredging continues.
Up there's a town hall. Right over there is an old fire station. Played a lot of checkers over there. Sure did. All this land's gonna be covered with water. Best thing ever happened to this town.
Ed and Bobby are riding in the back of a taxi. Up ahead, the church house is being moved.
We may have to stop just a minute for the church to get out of the way.
Ed's transfixed by the bell tolling in its tower as the building moves.
Christ.
The taxi driver takes a right turn and drives up to the hospital, where a police car is parked outside. Now, Ed's hurrying along a corridor some way ahead of Bobby.
Doctor, how's that boy?
Look, we're doing everything we can for him, but there's a chance that he might lose that leg, so take it easy on him, okay? I'll talk with you later.
Ed and Bobby hesitate briefly outside Lewis's room.
Officer?
Has it been awake yet?
No, we're still waiting for him to come around.
Ed sighs heavily before moving to Lewis's bedside.
Lewis. Lewis, listen. We had to change our story. Lewis.
His face glistening with sweat, Lewis's eyes flick open, and he winks.
How you feeling?
Never better.
The officer starts to come over. Ed notices this out of the corner of his eye.
Did you hear me?
What happened on that last set of rapids? I don't remember nothing. Nothing.
Ed squeezes his hand. Later, in the saloon car, Ed finds a photo of Drew smiling with his wife and two children. Bobby walks over as he's looking at it.
Want me to drive Drew's car back?
No.
Talk to his wife?
I'll do it, Bobby. Thank you.
The sheriff's car crawls to a halt in front of them, and Bobby casts a worried look back at Ed. Bobby wanders over as the sheriff climbs out.
You about ready to leave?
Yeah. The ground boys brought these cars down to you from Ory, is that right?
Right.
Did you happen to see another man with them up there?
There was someone, wasn't there?
I think so, yes.
The sheriff turns away in thought, and Bobby watches him anxiously before shooting Ed a questioning look. The officer walks over to Ed, who's still sitting in the saloon car.
Before you go, buddy, let me ask you something. How come y'all end up with 4 life jackets?
Didn't we have an extra one?
No. Drew wasn't wearing his.
Well, how come he wasn't wearing it?
I don't know.
The sheriff gives him a measured look, but Ed remains calm.
Don't ever do nothing like this again. Don't come back up here.
You don't have to worry about that, Sheriff.
I'd kind of like to see this town die peaceful.
I hope Deputy Queen finds his brother-in-law.
Oh. He'll come in drunk, probably.
As the sheriff returns to his car, Ed allows his cool composure to falter. The police vehicle pulls away, and Ed glances at Bobby, who hangs his head and lets out a hefty sigh of relief. Bobby comes over and shuts the door for Ed.
Goodbye, Ed.
Bye, Bobby.
I don't think I'll see you for a while.
Ed winds up the window, catching the sun's reflection in the pane. Partially submerged trees reflected in the calm waters of the reservoir. Ed stands by the road leading into its murky depths. He has an oar in one hand, and the kayak lies abandoned on its side nearby. Ed hobbles over to a damaged picket fence that trails off into the water. Beyond a line of trees, he glimpses workmen busy relocating the graveyard that belonged to the white-paneled church. While a tractor exhumes the graves, Ed frowns at the morbid sight of workmen loading the coffins onto the back of a truck. Now, Ed receives a relieved hug from his wife. She flops into a nearby armchair, and Ed crouches by his blonde-haired son playing at his feet. Dark, still waters of the reservoir in eerie twilight. A pallid, pleading hand rises from the depths and breaks the surface.
No!
Ed?
His wife flicks on a bedside light.
What's the matter? It's all right. It's all right.
Shh.
Go to sleep. Go to sleep.
She rests her head on his chest and closes her eyes. He cuddles her, but is now wide awake with troubled thoughts. He looks at his wife and gently strokes her golden brown hair.
Ed.